Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, the Dodgers swept the Diamondbacks again. We're going to talk all about the continued greatness of the starting pitching, the offense really doing their job, and we're going to talk a little bit about Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham and their little kerfuffle. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or even better, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening right now, and then you'll never miss a day because you know we're not going to. If you haven't watched or listened before, I am Jeff Snyder. That is Vince Samperio. We bring this to you every day. We're both lifelong Dodger fans, just like you are. We've also spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room, so we're not quite insiders, which is probably a good thing. But we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So let's talk about the Dodgers, Vince. We are 24 games into this stretch. I think originally we were talking about this stretch of games against teams that at the time when I was looking at the records, the teams that were at 500 or below, I said it was 26 games. That was because my brain still refuses to acknowledge the existence of doubleheaders. It's actually a 27 game stretch. We are 24 games into that, just the three games with the Pirates left. And so far the Dodgers are 17-7 in those 24 games. And that's even with that lousy four game losing streak in the middle of it. They were 16-7 when this stretch started. Now they are 33-14. So, you know, obviously the four game losing streak was lousy, but hard to complain too much about 17-7 so far.
Yeah, can't complain about 17-7. Can't complain about 8-2 on the long road trip. And can't complain about the second four game sweep of the D-backs in the last 14 days. I joked out last time with you off air. I was going to get a little broom from the Dodger sweep to have it ready for the – I didn't get it, so the Dodgers are making me regret that decision. But maybe I'll have it ready for the end of this Pirates series. They can take care of business there. But, yeah, 17-7, they now have the best winning percentage in all of baseball. And, you know, right exactly where we expected the Dodgers to be. The Yankees cooled off a little bit, and the Dodgers have not really done so after that four-game losing streak.
Yeah, and it's – The after starting 1-2 against the Diamondbacks, they lost their first series to the D-backs. They are now 9-2 overall against the D-backs this season because they have won the last eight, 2 four-game sweeps. And we've talked about how hard four-game sweeps are against anybody. Dodgers have done it twice to the Phillies, 4 straight series overall that they've gone into the series finale with a chance to sweep. They didn't get it done against the Nats or the Phillies, but they did do it twice against the D-backs. So we will take it. Now they head home to play 3 with the Pirates, and then maybe their toughest series of the year so far, depending on which version of the Mets there are. Obviously the Mets pitching, starting pitching isn't where they wish it was, but that's a good team and they get 4 with the Mets. So but let's talk about the series with the D-backs. This was a lot. We saw a lot of different aspects of the Dodgers in this series. There were a couple blowouts or one blowout and one good offensive game. And then 2 kind of nail biters a little bit, a 3-2 win and a 3-1 win for the last 2 games of the series. And it's kind of fun. Dontrelle Willis mentioned on the broadcast on Sunday that the Dodgers do need to kind of get used to playing these close games a little bit, just because in the postseason, they are likely to have a few more close games. And so finding ways to win those games. And yeah, they're still winning and they're still not really doing it with many home runs. But the big thing that I want to talk about in this first segment is the pitching. The starting pitching in this 4-game series, 20 1/3 innings pitched, only 3 earned runs allowed. Obviously, 20 1/3 is just over 5 innings per starter. But when, you know, one of those games was Michael Pepio, the other one was Mitchell White. I guess he goes by Mitch these days. You know, you can't.
I think Pepio goes by Ryan too.
What did I call him?
Michael.
Did I really? Michael Pepio?
Huh, probably the end of Michael Grove.
That's weird. Like, remember last year, I can never remember Logan Webb's first name, and now I mess up Ryan Pepio when literally my 2 sons are named Logan and Ryan. Maybe that's the problem. I refuse to acknowledge anybody else with my son's names. Ryan Pepio and Mitch White. And then Tony Gonsolin and Tyler Anderson. If you had told me at the beginning of the season, hey, we're going to have a four-game sweep of the D-backs, the four starters will be Tyler Anderson, Tony Gonsolin, Pepio, and White, by whatever first names you want to call them, and you're going to get 20 and a third innings pitch and three earned runs, I would have said, sign me up, please, because I don't believe you.
Yeah, and we're getting to the point in the season where, you know, things aren't so much – it's not as much small sample size as it was before, especially for starting pitchers. You know, you're almost – your six, seven games started at this point if you've been pitching since the beginning of the season. And, I don't know, Pepio and Mitch White are a little bit different because they're kind of in there by default, not by default, but because of injuries and everything else happening and giving guys rest. But, you know, Gonsolin and Tyler Anderson were both there since the beginning, started off the season piggybacking, and now are a formidable duo right there in the Dodgers rotation. And I think the thing for them is that, you know, Tony Gonsolin, we talked about a couple weeks ago how we were trying to figure out exactly how he does it because his FIP was so much higher than his ERA and he's always having base runners on. And, you know, other than limiting hard contact, which is a big part of it, it seemed like he was maybe pitching it a little over his head. But, you know, now we're 2 weeks later and it's almost equaled out his FIP and his ERA. He's starting to get deeper into games. Tyler Anderson's starting to get deeper into games. Went seven or eight innings last time, six innings this time. Probably could have got another one, but he had traffic every inning. So, you know, Dave Roberts made the move, take him out. But, yeah, I mean, it's not looking like if I think Plunkett tweeted out a stat that the Dodgers leading starters ERA, I think it's like 2.4 or something total. Yeah, if you would have told me that, I would have said no. But or I would have said it's a lot of luck in combination of stuff like that. But at this point, it looks like it's something that, you know, obviously they're not going to go out there and give you six, seven every single time. But, you know, more likely, more often than not, it looks like they are.
Yeah. And yeah. And if you had told us that the Dodgers would lead the league in ERA at this point, we would have assumed, wow, Kershaw, Buehler, and Julio must have all really stepped up big. And the fact is, that's not really the case. Kershaw was very good, but he's been hurt. Buehler has definitely not stepped up. He's been worse this year than he was last year. And Julio hasn't been bad other than one and a half starts. But he definitely, you know, record looks bad, but pitching performance, definitely you couldn't say he has stepped up from last year. It really has been these other guys who have, you know, between the starting pitching unexpected starters and the bullpen being lights out, which maybe that's a good segue into the bullpen, specifically Craig Kimbrel. I spent a lot of time talking last week about Craig Kimbrel, but he pitched twice in this series, allowed runs, allowed three runs, which was – how many did the Dodgers even allow total in this series? They allowed eight runs in the whole series, and three of them were by Craig Kimbrel. So, you know, not ideal, but I don't know. At this point, I feel like Kimbrel just needs to pitch more because the Dodgers aren't going to give him many save opportunities, and I think they're just going to have to start being more strict about saying, okay, you know what, Craig, you haven't pitched in 3 days. You're pitching today no matter what the score is, even if that means tomorrow you're not available for a save opportunity, or even go and say, you know what, you're pitching the next 2 days. We need you to get in this rhythm because it really seems like a rhythm thing. It's more of a command thing, and that seems like rust.
Yeah, he's had a weird season. I mean, if you go through and probably look through, he's had at least 4 days off probably multiple times already this season, and we're only 40-some games in. So it's for him, I know you talked about it, and I feel the same way, where you don't – maybe because he hasn't blown a game yet, he's just given up runs in either game – well, obviously in all games that they were up by multiple runs. So you don't feel – like I don't feel nervous when he comes in. But we also haven't seen him in too many one-run games. And if the ones we have, he hasn't given up those runs. So it's a matter of, you know, I don't know Craig Kimbrel enough yet to kind of have any strong feelings either way about him. But I would imagine that the Dodgers will have some more, you know, one-run games here in the future. He'll get in there and we'll see what he's really got.
Yeah, and the other Dodgers relievers have been pretty solid. David Price has made some good contributions. Justin Brule has bounced back from some struggles. Daniel Hudson's bounced back from some struggles. So all in all, really good pitching from the Dodgers this weekend, which is good. We're going to come back in a second. We're going to talk about the offense because that was also really good. Helped the Dodgers outscore the D-backs, I think, 26-8 on the weekend. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning. And please keep it locked on Dodgers. Our partner today is a product that I recently started using every day. Once again, I'll tell you a little background. Almost a decade ago, I lost over 100 pounds and I was in literally the best shape of my life. And part of my regimen then was Athletic Greens. It was a vital and super helpful part of my healthy lifestyle. Obviously, I've let myself go since then, but I am working on getting healthy again. And I'm counting on Athletic Greens to be a very important element of that. So what is it? With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging, all the things. As you know, it can get expensive to buy all the supplements and vitamins that your body needs. Athletic Greens costs you less than $3 a day, and it is full of high-quality ingredients that your body will actually absorb. It's a ton cheaper than buying all the supplements separately. And to top it off, for every purchase, Athletic Greens donates to organizations helping to get nutritious food to kids in need, including No Kid Hungry here in the U.S. They donated over 1.2 million meals last year. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/MLB Network. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/MLB Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutrition insurance. All right. Thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Maybe for your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast, where you can hear our local experts talking about every MLB game with analysis. We're taking fans through the season like no other network. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. All right, Vince, we talked about the pitching. The other half of this great series sweep of the D-backs was the offense. They put up, I think, 26 runs in the four games. Obviously, a bunch of those came in the first game when they scored 14. 14, 6, 3, and 3. So, we had a blowout. We had some nail biters. But overall, the offense got the job done. And I think we really saw what this lineup can be. So even these games where they didn't score a ton of runs, these last couple of games, you saw on Sunday, it started with Gavin Lux getting a base hit, Austin Barnes working a walk and really worked it. You know, he fouled off some tough pitches, worked himself a walk. And then Mookie Betts hits a deep enough fly out to move both runners over. So it's runners on second, third, one out, and Freddie Freeman coming up. And I thought at the time, it's hard to imagine Freddie not getting Lux in. And at this point, I think the Dodgers were they down? No, they weren't down. It was a scoreless game. That's right. Tyler Anderson didn't allow anything. It was a scoreless game. Sweet. The Dodgers. Oh, that's right. It's Will Smith had already homered. They are up 1-0. But the Dodgers are going to score a run here. And so after Freddie Freeman, of course, came through, poked a base hit to left field to score Lux. Trey Turner then had an infield ground out to score Barnes. Boom. There's your two runs. And I thought, I wonder if it's true that Freddie Freeman really is a lock to get that runner in. So I looked up, and Sunday was his 11th plate appearance with a runner on third and less than two outs this year. And in those 11 plate appearances, he has only failed twice. He has five hits in seven at-bats, plus two walks where he just passed the baton to Trey Turner, and two sacrifice flies. So seven of the 11 times he got at least one run in, two more times he walked to pass the baton. Only twice did he actually make an out that was hurtful. And that is remarkable. Obviously it's a very small sample size, but it's one interesting thing. It was actually his first single in those situations, his four other hits, three doubles and a home run. So he does his best hitting there. And they mentioned later on in the broadcast that it's really with runners on base versus not runners on base that Freddie Freeman really does his damage, because his OPS with nobody on base is in the 500s, and with runners on, it's like pushing 1500, I think, which is ridiculous. And yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, his OPS in all situations would be pushing 1500. But I think that's kind of the definition of clutch this year, if that he is getting the hits when they really, really matter.
Which is why Mookie Betts is up there in leaders and runs scored, because, you know, if he gets on, Freddie's hitting him in or getting him close, and then Trey's hitting him in. I mean, you just look at the 2 and 3 hitters. You look at Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner, and with just some runners in scoring position, Freddie Freeman's hitting .425 with a .561 on base percentage. So almost half the time he's getting a hit, more than half the time he's getting on base, which is more than you can ask for. Trey Turner in those same situations, a .362 batting average, runners in scoring position, you know, .385 on base. So he's not walking as much, but he's driving those runs in, and Trey Turner's up there in RBI for the entire league. You know, Mookie Betts is up there run scored because of those two. So it's a matter of, you know, those guys are coming through when needed. Yeah, we're maybe not getting as many of the solo home runs as before or and stuff like that. And that just happens. But, you know, we have seen the home runs uptake a little bit now with the weather changing and them moving around and maybe MLB going back to regular baseballs, whatever the case is. We've seen a small uptick in home runs. But at the end of the day, even if they're not hitting home runs, they're still scoring runs and they're putting up a lot of runs. So it's fun to watch. And at this point, yeah, with Freddie Freeman in whatever situation is with runners on base, you're just like, oh, man, he's going to get hit. And it feels weird because when he does come up with nobody on, you know, he does tend to strike out a little more. He does tend to, like, not hit. And it's – whatever it is, it's very interesting. But, you know, I'd much rather him hit with runners on – like, I'd much rather it be this way than an OPS over 1,000 with nobody on base and at 500 with people on base.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had noticed the higher strikeout rate with nobody on base too. And what that suggests to me is that it's a different approach. You know, he sees his job – differently. When he comes up with nobody on, he's trying to do some damage or get himself into scoring position, swinging a little bit harder, you know, and so that it is the higher strikeout rate. The walk rate is lower with nobody on base, which is kind of interesting. You could tell, so he's coming up there hitting. He's thinking, I want to hit a double, basically. And, you know, 5 of his 18 doubles have come with nobody on base. But that's what he's trying to do. He's coming up to, I'm going to put myself in scoring position because I've got Trey Turner right behind me. And so, but when he comes up with runners on base, especially runners in scoring position, he knows what his job is. His job is to get those guys in, and he's doing an outstanding job. You know, like you said, men on 1351 OPS. This is all before Sunday's game, so all of these things have gone up a little bit because he had a good game in this regard on Sunday. 1351 OPS with runners on, 1220 OPS with runners in scoring position. Both of those, you know, I was talking about SOPS plus last week, which is how a player compares to the league as a whole in that split. Both of those numbers are well into the 200s, which means he's more than twice as good as the average player in those situations. That's all you need to know. And really everything except bases empty, Freddie's been outstanding this year. And yeah, I will definitely take that trade off for sure. And especially because I feel like that's something Freeman's probably going to say, you know what, I'm going to work on that. I'm going to start getting on base more with nobody on base. And I bet those numbers go up. Maybe we should make a mental note to check back in a month, because I bet all those numbers will have gone up.
Yeah, definitely. And then I guess the only other thing from the offense this weekend is Max Muncy officially went on the injured list. Kevin Pillar up. He made his first start. Didn't get any hits. Made a good play out there in left field. I think they hyped it up a little bit. But it was all in all, it was a good play. And, you know, like I said, we're probably going to see him out there in left field a little more. Edwin Rios got a start in the infield, and he had been all DH to this point. Got a start in the infield, made a couple decent looking plays. So, you know, maybe these guys are going to step up and you know, be solid defensively and hopefully add some offense as well.
Yeah, Rios looked a little better defensively than I expected him to. His arm was stronger than I remember it being. And you know, maybe which shoulder was it? His right shoulder that he had surgery on last year.
Think so.
Probably shoulder, right? So that might have been why maybe his arm strength wasn't as good in the past, so that looked good. You know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Hopefully, I mean, the long-term hope is that Muncy gets right, and because like I've said before, the best version of this team has a healthy and productive Max Muncy in the middle of the lineup. The other thing I want to bring up offensively is Trey Turner. Like, legitimately, the other night, after, you know, however many games ago that was, after the game, they were talking to him, and it popped up on the screen, Trey Turner, 18-game hitting streak. And I legitimately thought it was a typo. I thought they meant 8. And I looked up, no, it's really 18. Like, and now we're at, what, 21, I think, after Sunday. Quietest little hitting streak ever to sneak up on me. And Kirsten Watson tweeted something out in Trey Turner has played like 89 games as a Dodger, and he already has hitting streaks of 17 games, 21 games, and 26 games or whatever. Maybe it's 16 and 27.
Yeah, right? It was 99 career games, 16, 27, and now currently on a 21. With many streaks of 4, 6, and 6 in between those.
So 64 of his 99 games have been part of a lengthy hitting streak. I mean, it's – and this one, we've seen him he's been hitting for a little bit more power during this streak. He's raised his batting average back up around 300. His slugging percentage gone up with some homers and some doubles. Trey Turner is the last few weeks hitting basically exactly what we would hope Trey Turner would be doing.
Yeah, I think the biggest part is the power from him, because as we saw, he started off the year pretty good, but it wasn't, you know, a lot of singles, a couple infield singles. He always seemed to be out ahead of the ball, or always, you know, hitting weak ground balls that sometimes he ended up getting on base because of him. But now he's starting to put some power into. He's starting to hit all fields. You know, he's still not there, and I don't know if he ever will be in terms of the type of hitter the rest of the Dodgers are, where, you know, taking pitches and drawing walks and stuff like that. But if he's hitting like this, then he doesn't have to.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have one more little bit of offense to talk about in a minute when we come back, and then we'll talk about the Jock Peterson, Tommy Pham debacle. I'm going to talk about a listener question about Will Smith being unlucky. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every weekday morning, and please keep it Locked On Dodgers. All right, we are back. Thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. We had a question from our listener, Gavin DeLuhosh, a loyal listener. I think he's been listening to us since back when we were the Scully Avenue podcast and only doing it once a week, like suckers. But Gavin asks, Sunday's home run notwithstanding, is Will Smith the unluckiest hitter in the league? And Gavin asked if we can put a little statistical analysis on that. And I will, and tell you, no, he's not. But he is the unluckiest hitter on the Dodgers, and he is up there among the most unlucky hitters in the league. There's a few different metrics you can use. One that I like, because it's easy to sort by, is if you're on Baseball Savant, you can do WOBA minus XWOBA. WOBA is weighted on base average. It's an advanced stat, and it's designed to be on the scale of on base percentage, just because that's a number we know about 330 is about league average. And so WOBA, same thing, about 330 is about league average. Anything higher is better, obviously. And then XWOBA is expected WOBA, meaning based on the quality of contact, how hard they've hit the ball, their launch angles, all that stuff, what should their WOBA be? And you subtract those, and the highest negative number, AKA the lowest number, is your unluckiest hitter. And so far this year, the lowest or highest negative number, I'm going to go with highest negative number, I like that more, is Christian Pache for the A's. He has a WOBA of 197 and an expected WOBA of 289. That's 92 points off of what would be expected. Will Smith ranks 22nd on this list. He's at minus 65 points. But if you look at the guys in front of him, the 21 guys in front of him, there are only three who have higher expected WOBAs than Smith does. Because Smith's expected WOBA is 395. His actual WOBA is 330. The only three guys with higher expected WOBAs than 395, Jock Peterson, whose WOBA is 399, and his expected WOBA is 468. So he's a couple points unluckier than Will Smith. Yordan Alvarez, WOBA is 380, expected WOBA is 453. So again, he's about 10 points more unlucky than Will Smith. And I lied, there's only those two. Oh no, Christian Walker. That's right. 323 WOBA, 397 expected WOBA. So his expected WOBA is a little bit higher than Will Smith's, and his differential is a little bit more unlucky. So really, you can make a case that Will Smith, among good hitters, is the fourth unluckiest hitter in baseball, which is, you know, it seems fitting. But it's also kind of interesting to see how many Dodgers are on this list in the negatives, because you've got, if I scroll down, Max Muncy is only a little bit less unlucky, more lucky than Will Smith. He's got a WOBA of 284 and expected WOBA of 338. Max Muncy's expected WOBA is actually slightly above average, but He's been below average. Freddie Freeman, WOBA of 385, expected WOBA of 434. I know I saw Justin Turner on here too. Yeah, 293 WOBA, 339 expected WOBA. So a lot of even the Dodgers guys who are performing well are getting a little bit unlucky. They're hitting the ball better than they probably than their numbers reflect. Gavin Lux, 319 WOBA, 345 expected WOBA. I know Mookie Betts is in the negatives too. So yeah, Dodgers, all this to say the Dodgers could be and should be even better than they have been, which is really something. But speaking of Jock Peterson, as we were a minute ago, Jock Peterson got slapped in the face by Tommy Pham because Jock Peterson made a joke about the Padres collapsing last year and maybe did something that Tommy Pham interpreted as cheating in a fantasy football league. I don't know anything about fantasy football. I do know about making jokes about the Padres collapsing last year. I haven't been slapped in the face for either of those things. Have you, Vince?
No, never been slapped in the face for it. My mom might have been close before, but she never actually did it. So,
but not for those things. Or for Padres, Padres jokes? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess I forgot your mom's a Padres fan.
Yeah. But, but yeah, no. Yeah, it's a story that's unfolded. It's been a multiple-day, multiple-layer story. It started with a pregame. All we knew was a pregame altercation. We knew it was Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham. We went to know that the Padres or the Giants had requested that Tommy Pham not play that night. He got pulled after the rain delay, pushed the game back. And then we found out that Jock Peterson got slapped. And then we found out it was over fantasy football. And then we also found out that it was over disrespectful, in the words of Tommy Pham, meme about the Padres. And yeah, just kind of all went from there. Everything kind of happened. Tommy Pham referred to Jock Peterson as kind of, I forgot the exact quote, but basically messing with his money. And he's a high roller in Vegas and everything else that wanted to come out. There's a second tough guy, Tommy Pham. We've had stories that we've had this year. He wanted to fight Luke Voit after a hard slide and was fighting with fans on Twitter after they called him out for a bunch of other stuff. So Tommy Pham's, got some anger issues in sense of things that don't really matter at the end of the day. But and even from what was said, from what Jock said, didn't seem like anything that was illegal, at least in any fantasy league I've ever been in. And then he also went on to mention that Tommy Pham did the same thing in a different league. So yeah, it's just a funny story.
Yeah, it feels like a Mad Lib in some ways. Like if you told me that Tommy Pham slaps Jock Peterson over fantasy football and a Padres meme, like I don't know. I expected to hear a story about somebody getting attacked because he stole his mom's chili recipe and won a chili cook-off with that or something ridiculous like that. Like it's crazy. And speaking of crazy, Tommy Pham is crazy. Like I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I don't play one on the internet, but it's been 7 months. Whatever happened was 7 months ago. A lot of people comparing this to Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. That was in the heat of the moment. Will Smith was mad in the moment and he did something he regretted. Tommy Pham had 7 months to think about this and still thought, yeah, I need to slap that guy in the face. Like I have never held a grudge for 7 months over anything. Like I don't understand, Vince. Like they say to count to 10 when you're angry. Tommy Pham had time to count to 10. I don't know. I don't know how smart Tommy Pham is. At least five times in the last 7 months. And somehow he was still so mad 7 months later that he thought Jock Peterson needed to be slapped in the face. And it wasn't for those stupid pearls. That's why Jock Peterson needs to be slapped in the face. Not for some Padres meme that was actually kind of funny.
Yeah, or a flesh colored mustache. But yeah, it's, you know, it's funny because it's Jock Peterson too. Cause you know, Jock is not that type of guy. He gets excited in the heat of the moment in baseball terms, but I don't think that has ever, I'm pretty sure Jock Peterson probably never gotten a fight in his life. The funny part too, was just like, they asked Jock about it and, Jock's been candid about the whole thing. If anything, this is the most Jock has ever wanted to talk to reporters than ever before. Cause he's usually very short with reporters and uses a lot of cliches, But not only did he talk about it, talk what it was about exactly, like he talked about exactly what it was about, and then came back the next day with the receipts of what the meme was and how the conversation went. And, you know, Tommy Pham didn't seem that angry in the moment. He just said, like, you know, I don't know you like that kind of thing.
And Jock apologized.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're still mad 7 months after you've gotten the apology, like, I don't know, Tommy Pham.
Yeah, it was just a lot. But, yeah, man, it added to the delight of a weekend where the Dodgers swept, you know, just a little sidebar delight. The other part is, you know, Jock Peterson right away was like, oh, yeah, the slap was the only part of it that was, you know, physical. He said violence isn't the answer, but, you know, realistically, we know why Jock wouldn't hit back, because, you know, you don't hit back in the fight, you're probably not going to win.
Yeah, yeah. Jock would get his butt kicked by Tommy Pham if they actually got in a fight. But, yeah, I mean, I respect that, especially when you get slapped. It's one thing if you get punched. Maybe you got to stand up for yourself. You get slapped, I think you feel good walking away saying, that dude just slapped me. Like, yeah. You know, I mean, that's what Chris Rock did. Will Smith just slapped it out of me. Like, that's all you can say, you know. But it's I don't know. There's so many better reasons to slap Jock Peterson. If you want to slap Jock Peterson, make it for a good reason. It's a good thing Jock doesn't have his iPhone set to delete messages after 30 days to save space. Because, yeah, he pulled up. Like, you got proof of everything there was. So, Tommy Pham, I'll say it on the record. Tommy Pham, the reason you're mad is because you were a big part of the Padres collapse, because you sucked in the second half of last season. And that's why you're mad. And grow up, dude. You know, Tommy Pham, he's ruining his career by being like this. And, you know, maybe he was ruining his career by hitting ground balls to third base every time he bats. But, you know, who knows? Yeah. I love Tommy Pham. Can you tell?
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, that he knew he was in the wrong was that they gave him a 3-game suspension. He didn't even appeal it. He just said, yeah, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't had strong feelings one way or the other about Jock Peterson since he left the Dodgers. You know, I'm starting to feel fond towards him again, you know? So yeah, good for Jock Peterson and Tommy Pham. I hope you get released and never play another baseball game, because you're crazy. And I hope if you murder somebody, it's not me. So there we go. That's it. All I have. You got anything, Vince?
Nothing else.
Back all home. Right. I think that's going to do it for us then. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for making us your first listen every day. It means the world to us. For your second listen, what should I tell you? Why don't you check out Locked On MLB? That's where Paul Francis Sullivan, aka Sully, brings humor, passion, and unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. If you aren't watching or listening to Locked On Dodgers every day, we would love if you had a couple days a month of your rotation. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, please tell them about the show. If you have a mom who's a Padres fan, turn her into a Dodger fan and have her start listening to the show. All that good stuff. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. You can email us anytime you want, lockedondodgers@gmail.com. Or you can send us a voicemail or a text message at 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.